Blog Talk Radio.
Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
Talk too motherfucking much. I got my drink, I got my music.
K-Dot, get in the car, nigga. Come on, we finna roll out. Nigga, I got a pack of blacks and a beat CD. Get your freestyles ready.
All right, royalty to all. Thank you guys for tuning in another podcast of Enhancing Awareness Radio. This is Motivational Classroom, guys. And as you know, Strange of the Ear, you know that Enhancing Awareness Radio Ear, right, is one big classroom, right, where we learn together, we grow together, we be vulnerable together, we take accountability together, you know what I mean, we fight together. If you can look back in the archives, you know, other hosts and the other guest hosts, you know, raw, authentic, you know, just expression, you know what I mean? So Enhancing Awareness Radio is about growth, elevation, you know, enhancing your awareness, right? Like Erykah Badu always says, well, what she did say, it's one thing to be aware, right? You can know all this shit, right, but to be aware. So that's what Enhancing Awareness Radio is about. All right, so
when I say good, I don't mean perfect. I mean that you're aware.
And when you say good, you mean positive.
I mean aware. Right. No good if you're not aware, even if you're positive. You can be emulating something positive. That's no good, you know. It's good when you're aware. I'm aware that I'm bad. I'm aware that I'm happy. I'm aware that I'm sad. I'm aware that I'm, you know, old. Where, that's
good.
You know, that can take you
everywhere. Yes, I love that. Someone had put that up on a post. And I was like, wait a minute. All right, Erykah, you know. And we love Erykah around here, right? So, all right, guys. Today, I wanted to talk about projections, okay? Because I entitled it, and I like to pose my podcast, you know, as a question, right? Because, again, this is one classroom where we're all learning and growing together. And I feel that many of us do not focus on projections as much, you know what I mean? Because projection can be a powerful tool to manipulate, okay? Let's just be real. A powerful tool to manipulate. You see it on mainstream a lot, you know, as far as news projecting negativity, something bad is always happening. And, you know, what I've noted is that it kind of got a hold to a certain generation because it's like, you know, certain generations kind of adapt to certain things, you know what I mean? Like naturally, because, you know, it's all they know. It's all that was bred. Born and bred to do, right? So bad news, okay? That's a projection, right? That something bad is always happening in the world. And I feel that that's done by design. Let's just keep it real, right? Done by design, you know, to keep us in a certain frequency, okay? So with that being said, when it comes to projection, guys, it's very important to be aware, right? Aware of the projections. Right now, what I'm seeing a lot on these social media platforms and a lot of us is a projection of sexual energy. You know what I mean? And it's a perverted version of sexual energy. But even with these projections, it's very key to be mindful of what we allow in. You know, if you're listening to the news all day and you're allowing in your space, this is a bad world. This is a sad world. This is sad. This is bad. This is blah, 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 blah. You know, it keeps you locked in this certain frequency of the world is bad. And, you know, my thoughts and my mind were so trapped in that so long until I broke out of jail, right? But, no, literally, frequency jails. Seriously, guys. Our minds can be locked into a frequency jail unaware. I wish I had my bell. Okay? So, you got to ring the bell on there, y'all. Where my fucking bell at? But anyway, guys, frequency jail. So, there we go. All right, so it's very important to be aware. All right, so projections, guys. Yes. So what we're talking about today, guys, is a classroom. I'm going to play a few different aspects on what projections is, how you can understand it, and what you can do about it. We always close in balance as far as the solutions is concerned. So you guys know how I do it in the classroom. I pull different clips of many different perspectives, well, a few different perspectives, okay, of what projections are. I love Teal Swans. And as you guys always know, all of my video credits are going to be always in the show notes. You can contact me. I do sessions, guys. I do readings and book sessions, and I got a lot of creative things that I do, right? So my link tree is also in the show notes. If you ever want to contact me, check me out, see a little bit of what I do. That's going to be in show notes as well. And, yeah, I encourage you guys to go like and subscribe to every channel that I play, because it's a lot of material as far as just learning. You know, some of us just like to learn. You know, I always say self-education is the best education. You know what I mean? We can go to the schools and, you know, it's a projection of, I don't know, you know, when it comes to these projections in the world today, I feel that fear is like the underlining projection. You know what I mean? It's like the whole motive is fear underneath all of the layers of this and that and this and that and, you know, comparison and fear. Comparison and fear, y'all. So be very mindful, again, not to get caught in Charlie's web, right? So that's what this awareness is about today. So let's go ahead and start in on what projections are, right?
Hi, everyone. It's Dr. Romney, and welcome back to this series on the glossary of handbook, a dictionary of all the terminology that you've run into when you're learning about narcissism or narcissistic relationships. I put this series together because these terms are always floating out there, but not everyone is always clear on what they mean. This series is meant to bring some clarity onto these terms and hopefully not only enlighten and inform you, but hopefully even give you techniques for understanding what to do when you're in the face of this. Today, the term we're going to take on is projection. Before you keep going, I'm always going to ask you, if you're enjoying this content or want to know more about this, please hit the subscribe button and the bell to get notifications and to subscribe to this channel to get ongoing notifications about the many videos we post on a weekly basis. So let's talk about projection. You look at your partner strangely when he or she accuses you of lying and manipulation. You're a person who's fully aware of your own character flaws, but lying and manipulation are just not things that you do. In fact, chuckle to yourself. Maybe in a sort of bleak way, but you do chuckle to yourself and reflect on how bizarre it is that they are accusing you of the very thing that they do. They may accuse you, the narcissist in your life, of lots of odd things, accusing you of being angry when you're not. They think you feel disappointed about something when you're actually fine with it. You may actually think right now, and I'm sure you do, think that I'm describing gaslighting of something out of the sleep, out of the dream that is patently untrue. In fact, a primitive defense that is called projection. And yeah, there's some gaslighting in there, but it's projection. So let's work backwards a little bit. I'm going to be a little professor for a minute and start with what exactly is a defense. We all have defenses. They protect our ego, and they're designed to keep that uncomfortable and unacceptable and even threatening unconscious stuff under wraps. Roy and his contemporaries introduced this framework of defenses as sort of being these sort of psychological screens and sort of halls of mirrors that kind of twist things to protect our primitive stuff. The fact is that all of us rely on our defenses from time to time. We may lie to avoid sharing an uncomfortable truth about ourselves. We may hold a bizarrely strong opinion about something because of negative conflict. Common defenses include things like denial, rationalization, reaction formation, sublimation, and of course, what we're talking about, projection. My work as a therapist is to work with clients to push through these defenses and give people a safe space to dig deeper, because the defenses are like walls we need to get through. Now, not all mental health practitioners fully ascribe to the concept of defenses, and I get that. But however you think of it, maybe you're going to think of them as ways of thinking. They are a way of protecting ourselves from that uncomfortable stuff settles us psychologically and we don't really want to deal with. So if defenses are normal, when exactly do they become a problem? They become a problem when a person over-relies on those defenses as a way of relating with the world. But these defenses, in essence, become the person's primary way of dealing with the world. Now, let's go back to our narcissists. For narcissists who have such fragile, delicate egos, there is no way that they've been allowed that fragile core to get threatened. But for them, it's all defenses all the time. Projection is the most classical defense of the narcissist. And this is something that's been written about by the granddaddies of the field, Freud and Kernberg and all of them. Now, it makes sense because projection is deep and primitive, just like the insecurity and the ego vulnerability of the narcissist. Projection happens when a person projects an unacceptable thought or behavior or feeling or an uncomfortable conflict onto someone else. Now, what you've got to keep in mind, and this is the tricky bit, conscious process. It's a bit like psychologically, again, throwing up, something I've talked about before, basically psychologically getting sick. Any one of you who's ever really got sick knows that there's nothing you could have done to hold it back. It just comes out of you and happens quickly. And sadly, that's exactly how projection works. The ridiculous, awful, and confusing words and accusations come out. And you look at these things that are coming at you confused. You're saying, what? Huh?
You know, there's a very point that you see that. It's like the vomit of, you know, one thing that I noticed is that there is promoting negativity is big business, okay? So you ever notice how it can be like a whole algorithm of things that are being projected out onto the world, and that's not even your shit, but you find yourself adopting it or even agreeing with it or saying, wait a minute, or even your subconscious mind, that's why I should have played that video, but excuse me, I may insert it if we have time, but the subconscious mind is very important. Projection plays a huge part, and especially in repetition when it comes to the subconscious mind. This is, again, why we must be very careful of what we allow into our minds, right?
However, when you attempt to explain or defend or make sense of them, because it's unconscious for the person who's projecting onto you, they don't take ownership of it. And a person who's a narcissist will likely start gaslighting you or calling you crazy or paranoid or insane. Projection happens with every single narcissist out there. It's one of the things that's a universal. And it's a built-in part of the narcissistic pattern. Like I was referring to Freud before. Freud, in Freud's early writings about narcissism, as well as the writings of other really famous narcissism theoreticians like Otto Kernberg. They really delve into how important this idea of projection, this defense, is to understanding the narcissistic personality style. Now, do all of us sometimes engage in projection? Absolutely, yes. All of us do it. All of us have those uncomfortable things, those uncomfortable conflicts deep in us that we do accuse other people of. And that defense and all those slips can take place at times when we feel vulnerable, anxious, or even just really fatigued. The goal of therapy, and particularly those kinds of therapies that focus on our early histories, is to resolve those unresolved background issues so we do less of stuff like projection. But for most of us, when we engage in projection and someone points it out to us, we recognize that we may have hurt someone or that we may have confused them. And then we subsequently apologize and empathize with their confusion and just sort of how upsetting that might have been. Narcissists, however, don't engage in that kind of restorative work. They go on to their next favorite defense, which is denial. And then, between denial and projection, they just double their bet on everything in the whole universe of projection. Projection bothers us because it's so confusing. It doesn't feel good to have someone tell us we feel a certain way or did something or to have someone tell us that we have a certain intention. You're so jealous of me. Like, I'm not. And it feels worse when you can't have a conversation about the fact that being accused of something doesn't feel good. Now, if you don't know what projection is, or that projection, yet you're being subjected to it, then it all becomes even more confusing. Because if someone tells you that you are angry, and you're actually having a perfectly good day, it can really feel like you've stepped into the twilight zone. But when you recognize that it's projection, then it can really make sense to you. And actually, this is the point at which projection, bizarrely enough, can actually be your friend, especially if you are managing a relationship with a narcissist. Remember that the narcissist is projecting that something that's very uncomfortable about themselves or something that they're feeling onto you. So if indeed their projection is inaccurate, and this is where you've got to be honest, okay? So if there are times when a narcissist may say, hey, I think you're angry, and in fact you are angry, it may in part be, yes, a projection, but it also may be true. So you got to fess up when their projection and your reality actually line up. But when projection takes place, and it is patently inaccurate, then instead of gearing up to defend yourself to them or getting into an argument about how wrong they are, take a minute and pause. Pause, stop, and the thing that you're being accused of is actually reflective of their experience. So it tells you something. It's a piece of data about their inner world. If they're calling you angry when you are absolutely not angry at all, then they are likely angry. When they accuse you of being jealous and you're not, they're the ones who are jealous. And this can actually be a bit of a useful parlor trick even beyond that. When they start accusing you of things that really may be very untrue, for example, they accuse you of infidelity or of cheating or micro cheating or some kind of affair or lying, and you have noticed actually that it's their behavior that seems to be changing and maybe even veering in that direction, it may in fact be an indicator that they're doing the very thing, or at least thinking about the very thing, that they are accusing you of. Now, this idea of projection has definitely come into the public consciousness. For example, someone in the same conversation is, stop projecting yourself onto me. Now, so many of us are aware of it when it is happening to us. We recognize that it's a projection. But it's really important to recognize that the projector, narcissist or not, is often actually unaware of what he or she is doing. So while it is annoying as hell, talking about it serves no purpose. It's important that you don't expend psychological energy trying to explain it and talk about it. Narcissists project to protect themselves, as is the case with all defense mechanisms. It tends to be, though, their preferred defense mechanism. It protects the fragile and insecure ego from unacceptable and shameful stuff. So that stuff gets rejected and then projected on whoever the person who is unfortunate enough to be closest to them or someone who's very significant and a bit of a lightning rod for them. Now, narcissists, because it's sort of this primitively dysfunctional personality style, they tend to over-rely on all of their defense mechanisms, not just projection. Projection just happens to be their favorite. They also have other very popular defense mechanisms, including denial, rationalization, and reaction formation. And reaction formation is when a person takes an overly impassioned or even angry stand about something because it is the opposite of their truth. The tendency of the narcissist to focus almost solely on appearances and superficial stuff is in line with protecting themselves. It doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter if my internal psychological world is a mess. As long as I portray a good shiny image to the world, no one will ever know. For those of us experiencing it, it is very confusing to be in the face of projection until we know what it is. Then we are empowered to take the high road and see it as the defensive maneuver it is. Smile a quiet smile within ourselves, as well as have a pang of pity for how fragile the narcissist is, that they have to take those chaotic insides and put them outside. And then there is also the fact that we all sometimes engage in projection. All we can do is catch ourselves, apologize, remain mindful, remain aware, self-monitor ourselves, and always take a moment and attempt to restore trust and fix those ruptures when we are responsible for those things. Projection is confusing. Projection is primitive. But when it happens, we know it. And then that idea that somebody is making accusations about our intentions or our behavior or our thoughts and feelings, they're going to get some kind of twisted fortune tellers and really hold to their guns that it's true. Don't get you. This is really a time to step back, nod politely, recognize what you're in the face of, and really save yourself a lot of trouble by not going into the fire there. Thank you again for tuning in. I hope this has clarified your understanding of projection. If you've ever been in a narcissistic relationship, this is the one term, the one pattern, I guarantee that you have experienced. So as always, when you experience it now, you have a better idea of what.
Powerful. I love that. I love her perspective. You know, as I was listening, I started to think, because you guys know we take accountability. It was a point where I was not taking accountability, but growth teaches you so much, right? And we are willing to look at ourselves in the mirror and transparent about it, right? And that's beautiful. that's the real beauty, right? But beauty is in the eye of the beholder, okay? So what I'm saying is that I started to know, my accountability on ways that I will project, you know, and I will project anger and sadness and pain and, you know, and then it would, you know, it will make, like, people who are in my immediate, you know, it will make me feel some type of way because of my projections. But there are also people who knew that I was projecting. You know what I'm saying? So, again, not only being aware of outside external world, but also being aware of our very own projections, setting boundaries, okay? And I love that this ties into narcissistic personality because when I think of even, again, the narcissistic traits that I may have and that, you know, external vibrations of this, right? I think that in these aspects, there is no balance. There is no balance. And we are in a energy space of everything has to be balanced. Or not, as teachers used to always say, or not. And the or not part, you know what I'm saying, with the energy spiking, we're going to fuck around and find out. Okay, and that's for everybody on every level, you guys. There's no cheating energy anymore. I tried, okay? Please know I tried, and I still try sometimes, only to give you a little bit. So let's talk about boundaries and cutting the ties, guys. I think that this is also a key aspect of this.
Now, it's impossible there not be a state of connectedness when we do this. It's impossible when you take something as yourself to not care about its needs, to not know them so as to meet them. Most of us didn't grow up in this type of a situation. If we did, we're damn lucky and probably don't need to be watching this video. Probably should just in case we have other people in our lives that should be watching this video. But all right, for the rest of us who basically did not grow up in this type of situation, nobody took us as part of themselves. So nobody could actually consider our best interest and meet our best interest and meet our needs. For those of us who are just so fortunate enough to end up in that type of a situation in childhood, then we form connections in the same way that a spider forges a web to catch flies. People who are not loved feel unlovable for who they are. They live in a permanent internal atmosphere of shame. As a result, love, as a gift, seems impossible. Someone simply wanting to be connected to us seems impossible. Someone wanting to give to us because it makes them happy to see us happy is impossible. Instead, we get love by giving something. Our love becomes completely transactional. And we don't even realize that this is happening. We think it's love. But here's where it gets really, really gritty. If our self-esteem is poor enough, we don't actually believe we have something of value to give someone enough that they would want to give us something back. So our transactional nature takes a drastic downward spiral in which we feel like we actually have to trap people into giving us what we need. Many households around the globe, regardless of what culture these households belong to, parent without love. They parent in the way that a spider catches flies. But I'm going to have to get you to understand the way this happens. And so I'm going to have to pick the cultures that are perhaps the very most like this, the Asian culture and the Indian culture. So that you can understand, I'm going to give you a highlight from the Indian culture. Okay, so to generalize, in this culture, a person is not really seen as a unique individual with free will and their own purpose, who just be loved and been able to follow their own path. A person in this culture is seen as a thing that belongs to their family and to society, and that by virtue of being born in the first place, he or she is already in debt to the family and society and will repay that debt through serving whatever role and identity has been decided for them. In these kinds of homes, a parent often believes they're sacrificing everything for their child, when in fact they're not sacrificing anything. They're simply wearing the facade of sacrifice so they can trap their children with shame and guilt in the sense that they owe their parents in some way. The things they pays tenants give always come with invisible strings attached. They're always giving in order to get back. They're engaged in a transaction that the child did not even agree to in the first place. They're simply putting the child in a state of debt to them. They're giving things to this child simply so that they can get things back from the child. Any time the child does something that displeases them, the child's debts, the things the parents have done for them, are hung over the child's head so as to get the child to surrender their free will and conform again to what the parent wants. These parents give their time to a child and potentially even give up their own dreams to get the sensation of being good and righteous and receive gratitude and praise from others. In this way, they're martyrs. These parents put a roof over their children's head to get loyalty and alliance. These parents feed their children to guarantee that they will be taken care of by their children when their children are grown and they are elderly. These parents give their children opportunities so that they can gain status. These parents say, I love you because look at everything I do for you, but the reality is that it doesn't feel like love because it isn't. It's a spider web that the children have been trapped in.
Uh-oh.
So you can understand the horror of growing up in this type of a family, and you don't have to be part of these two cultures I've highlighted in order to be part of this type of a family. What happens here is that any time the child accepts something that the parent does for them, which, by the way, the child can't not do because it's dependent on the parent, an invisible string is attached. So by the time this person is an adult, string, until this child is so controlled that there are mass consequences for not complying. Transactional love and the twisted web that it weaves is a human epidemic on the planet today. It's present in any type of a classic dysfunctional home with the presence of a narcissist and a codependent type dynamic. This is not a household of love. So it's really funny to me when I walk inside these kinds of households, because so many of them have these plaques on the wall, at least in America, plaques that say, there is great love in this home. And really, it's like somebody should take the plaque off the wall, scratch it off, and write, there is great manipulation in this house, and hang it as the family emblem in the house. I talk about manipulation at length and what creates it in one of my videos that I strongly encourage you to watch. It is called Meet Your Needs. One of the biggest problems with being raised in a transactional type of love relationship in childhood is you grow up to believe that there's no other type of love that exists. This becomes your platform for how to have a relationship. You don't even see that anything's out of order. And we basically approach every relationship in our life as if it's a business deal. But it's a lot more dysfunctional than a business deal because these strings that are attached are invisible instead of visible. If I do this, then they'll do this. Our whole life is tit for tat. Now, when we enter into a business type of relationship, we expect this. I will give you this, and you will give me that. But that's transparent. It's the transparent nature of these business relationships that we don't do in our private life that makes them so incredibly dangerous. We basically have all kinds of writing that's not even written down. You know, it's not even about the fine print. So you get trapped, and you get yourself in debt when you didn't even agree to it. Now, here is where this gets incredibly painful. Expressions of love are instantly equated with the sensation of owing someone. Now, owing someone, being in debt, is not fun because it's a subservient position. There is no equality in that. And so we will naturally avoid it at all costs. The name of the game, if we are in this type of transactional relationship dynamic with people, is you keep them in debt to you and not the other way around. The one who's in debt is the one who's trapped in the spider's web under the control of the spider. You will actually feel worse going towards you. Each thing they do for you makes you feel more and more enmeshed, more trapped in the spider's web, less and less free, more and more in debt. And eventually, like you're going to have to give away your free will and your desires and your needs in order to repay the debt. This is when your enmeshment trauma kicks in and you have to withdraw to maintain your sense of free will and identity. At this point, you either push the other person away or have to create a situation where the debt is paid off entirely so that you can put them back in debt to you. You're doing this because you learned in your childhood that love equals being trapped. Those of you who want to believe that the spider's web analogy is just Thiel's way of being extreme and explaining things in an extreme way so people understand it, think again. On an energetic level, this is actually the relationship of the current. The spider either simply catches the fly because it flew into the web, which is the same thing as a child just being instantly born into a family, or because it finds a way to lure the fly in, the same way that a person offers something to someone else. But in either scenario, there are strings attached. Either way, the fly gets stuck in the webbing. The person is trapped in the same way the fly is trapped. Then the spider feeds off the fly. This is the phase where the person gets his or her needs met through the forced transaction. They are taking what they believe they deserve, but the person didn't agree to giving as an exchange in the first place. For example, a mother has a child and decides that she needs that child to be a professional athlete so she can have status and significance through that child. The transaction is that she will give her hours to drive the child to classes and spend money so that the child can become that thing. The child never agreed to this transaction, but any time the child expresses his or her own free will, the mother will remind the child he or she is trapped in debt. I gave all this money and time to you so you could be this thing. You're so selfish. The guilt makes the child continue to become a professional athlete. The mother feeds on this status and significance through the child. She's literally eating her child that was trapped in her web by virtue of being born to her and having any needs at all. I'm also going to explain, if we're into this transactional relationship type of dynamic when it comes to love, I'm going to explain another common pattern. If our self-esteem is so incredibly low that we don't believe that we can actually offer anything that is of enough value to get a genuine transaction going as to functional as that is, then we go a step further. We realize that one of the most perfect ways to put somebody in debt to us is to rescue them. So we become a perpetual rescuer. We can't be loved who we are, so we got to do something to rescue them. Now, here's the problem. When a person gets rescued, if we rescue them, they naturally start to get better, right? There's a point at which they start to rehabilitate, they start to get on their feet again. Now, when we're in this type of a position to risk the loss of them, and so what do we have to do? We have to put them in debt again. Otherwise, they're going to leave us, right? We don't have anything valuable enough to offer them so that they stay. So what we do is we create a scenario that makes them need rescue again. And by coming in and rescuing, we put them in debt again to us. So we're actually creating a situation where they owe us over and over and over and over again. That's another type of dysfunctional transactional relationship. You will see this pattern chronically in alcoholic homes or homes where a codependent has married somebody who's mentally ill. You've got a person who has a dysfunction already, and it's a genuine dysfunction. So when that person starts to improve, it creates terror in the other one. And so they actually create scenarios that cause a flare-up of either the addiction or the mental illness so as to collapse the person. And it's one of the reasons why recovering is so incredibly hard for a person who's trapped in that type of a dynamic. If somebody tried to collapse somebody who didn't have a dysfunction already, it wouldn't work. The person would immediately feel the pattern of play and would leave the relationship. But the person with the dysfunction can't because they have a real genuine problem. This kind of desperate dependency is the closest that a person raised in a transactional way can feel to the guarantee that they will never be abandoned. They believe that being left by a person without a dysfunction is inevitable because they don't have enough to offer someone who does not desperately need them for the transaction meeting their needs because they've already learned they cannot be loved who they are. If you were raised in this type of home, what you aren't aware of that I'm hoping to make you aware of today is that the name of the game in your relationship is get people in debt to me. You have to have transactional relationships, right? The major thing that's destroying your relationships and also your own capacity to feel good because you're going to feel resentment on the ground today is that you put them in contracts they never agreed to, and this is what you're not doing. These are subconscious, undisclosed agreements and contracts that you have with these people. One of the reasons you didn't directly express these subconscious contracts you have with people, the strings attached, is that you're not consciously aware of them. Also, somewhere deep inside of you, the part of you that is aware of them knows that if you express these contracts or expectations directly, that no one would agree to them. So your needs would never get met. So you're just going to have to get it without their knowledge or without their consent. I'm going to give you some examples. You figure out quickly how to meet their needs so that you can guarantee that you'll be indispensable for them. This is called hooking someone. You give up something in your life with the expectation that they give up the same thing for you. You show them physical affection with the expectation that they're going to give it back to you. You give them freedom and space so you can get that from them. You pay for dinner so that you can avoid being in debt to them, and instead, you can put them in the position of debt to you. You help them out in the time of need by doing something for them so that you can guarantee their alliance and loyalty. You do things for them so that you can get appreciation. You give them a gift with the expectation that they will never say something bad about you. You are always counting score. So using this previous scenario, let's say that you give somebody a gift so that you can guarantee that they will never say something bad about you. You're basically buying loyalty. They didn't know that's what it meant when they took the gift. They weren't saying, oh, and this means I'm always going to ally to you and I'm never going to say anything bad about you. They never agreed to that. So obviously, because that wasn't a transaction that they agreed to, maybe they talk crap behind back. And now you're like, how dare they ask for what I did? There's the expectation. You feel betrayed because betrayal is about a breaking of a presumptive contract. However, it's presumed on your part and never agreed to on their part. So doing this with people sets up a recipe for lifelong resentment. Basically, what I want you to understand is you're doing the same thing to them that your parents did to you when you were a child. The roles are reversed. You're the parent now, trapping the kid in a situation where they're frozen under the weight of now being in debt when they didn't realize that was the situation they were getting into by accepting something. Now, here is probably the worst part about this transactional relationship dynamic. Now that you're in this place where you feel like somebody did you wrong or betrayed you, because the transaction wasn't fair on their part. You're in a situation where the only way to stay feeling like a good person because of your deep-seated feeling of shame and on top of the debt game is to feel like someone has wronged you. You have to be in a place where what somebody else did to you is unfair. You are dependent on a state of resentment, which is being unfairly wronged, to escape your deep-seated core shame. You're full of anger that you most likely can't express because of this dynamic. I want you to know what parenting is supposed to look like without this dynamic. In this type of a household, the parent understands that the child did not ask to be born. That's something that the parent decided. And what is being given to you by the universe is this precious gift is not actually theirs in the first place. It's the universe's gift. And they have been charged with the guardianship of this thing and the enabling of it to move in the direction of its own predetermined destiny and story. So this child is like a gift to unwrap, to see what it has in its essence in terms of purpose and desire and motive. This relationship is a partnership, not a dictatorship. The universe had trusted this parent with this incredible gift, knowing that the partnership between them will lead to the expansion and spiritual progression of both the parent and child. This child is meant to be seen by the parent as part of him or her. This love will naturally inspire the parent to demonstrate his or her love to the child through affection and gifts and quality time and acts of service and appreciation. When these demonstrations of love are done, they are not done to get anything back. They are done because it feels good to demonstrate love to something that you love. You do not need incentive. Doing something lovely for them feels like doing something lovely for yourself when you're taking something as part of yourself. And all beings, including children, naturally demonstrate love back when they feel reciprocal love, which a child always will. Both parent and child are free, and so they are free to love each other and demonstrate love to each other. A child didn't have to do anything for the parent or be anything for the parent to feel this love. This is the kind of loving you want from your parents, and this is the kind of loving relationship you still want, the kind with no invisible strings attached. Having a relationship with no invisible strings attached to you is very dependent upon becoming aware of those subconscious assumptions and expectations that you hold. For this reason, I ask you to watch my video that is titled Priceless Relationship Advice, Expectations and Assumptions. The next thing you have to do is to become aware of these contracts that you are forging on a subconscious level with people before you actually expect them to sign it. When do you really want to be giving something with no idea of what you'll get in return? Notice the betrayal and unfairness you feel in all of your relationships, especially when it arises. Betrayal, again, is the breaking of a presumptive contract. The question is, which contract? I want you to remember that in a business transaction, the reason it often takes so long to settle on an agreement is because the companies go back and forth until they agree upon that contract. I cannot tell you how fast a company would be brought to lawsuit if what they did is sneak in some kind of a agreement the other party didn't agree to. We can't expect our relationships to go any better than that on an emotional level if this is what we're doing. Now, I'm just going to tell you, conscious contracts in a relationship, something where it's like, I'll give you this and you give me this, it's still painful, but it's 10 times better. Like, if you're conscious that it's a transaction, then you're worried you're agreeing to it. However, what you really want is your hat. What you really want is to be loved. What you really want is for somebody to give you something or to do these loving demonstrations. And it's the sheer enjoyment of doing that for you because they've taken you as part of themselves. Become aware of the discomfort of feeling subservient and in debt when someone does something nice for you. Feel the pressure of having to even the score to feel free. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to make a vow that you're not going to do anything for someone if you want something back, unless you're going to be willing to express that expectation directly. This includes appreciation. I really want to focus on this because this is one of the most common and societally accepted transactions that we have. Our subconscious expectation is we're going to get appreciation back. I don't want you giving to anybody if even that is your expectation. Next, find a place in you that is able to love something so much that you can take it as part of yourself to the degree that you literally simply feel good when that thing feels good. Now, I don't really care if to begin with this is a person. It may not be. This may be something like a plant or an animal. I want you to experience the sensation of really giving to something because it just makes you so happy to see them feel good. The next thing is you have to develop healthy boundaries, and you have to give in alignment with those boundaries. In a healthy, non-transactional, unconditional, loving relationship, there is always room for people's boundaries. And if there is a need conflict, the conversation is about the need conflict. It's not about you need to give in to me. For this reason, I ask you to watch my video titled Personal Boundaries versus Oneness, How to Develop Healthy Boundaries. It is better to acknowledge to somebody or to yourself, I don't want to give to this person at all, than it is to give something you don't want to give. It's better for you. It's better for the other person. So start to give people what your parents never gave you or what other people who are into this transactional dynamic never gave you. Now, I'm going to explain something. Transactional based relationships do not work for our self-esteem long-term. Why? Because what do you think that you're going to think of yourself if the only way that you would possibly get anything from someone else is to give them something? Worse than that, what do you think you're going to think of yourself as the only way to get what you need from somebody because they can't possibly love you enough to take your needs into consideration? It's trapped them into it. Now, here's another thing. I want you to notice the ways that you are totally strings attached, not unconditional, in terms of your giving with yourself. Do you give yourself a day of rest so you can be more productive and perform tomorrow? Do you give your body or give it what it needs with the expectation that it will never get sick or break down? Do you let yourself have fun with the expectation that you'll work to deserve it? Do you only feel appreciation for yourself when you give yourself an achievement? Begin to notice these subconscious contracts that you have with yourself. Notice how they mirror the transactions you had with your parents growing up and practice demonstrations of love towards yourself without any expectation of return from yourself. Unconditional demonstration of love. This is no strings attached. It's a type of love relationship where we give something without any idea of getting something back. We give it out of the pure desire to see somebody feel good in the receiving of it. Loving in this way is the act of extending yourself, vulnerabilities included, into uncharted emotional territory with the intent that regardless of the outcome, we want to benefit another person. When someone else's happiness is experienced as your happiness, you know you have found unconditional love. This unconditional, no strings attached love is the highest form of ecstasy that we can experience on this planet, and all beings on this planet deserve to experience this type of love. And let it start with you. Have a good day. Chances are you've heard of projection. You've been in that scenario where you're looking at someone who's upset at you thinking, isn't that just the pot calling the kettle black? Or you've been in that situation where someone looks at you and says, you're just projecting. But the thing is, most of us don't know the mechanisms behind projecting. We don't know why we do it or how to stop, which is, of course, why we're having this discussion today. We are born whole. But that wholeness is short-lived. It's short-lived because we are born relationally dependent. To be born relationally dependent in a family that is not fully evolved yet because society is not fully evolved yet spells immense trouble. It means that we're about to learn that certain aspects of ourselves are acceptable and certain aspects of ourselves are unacceptable. And this is where the trouble starts. What is acceptable versus unacceptable depends upon the family you're born into. The aspects of us that are seen as unacceptable, both positive and negative, are rejected by our family. And the aspects that are seen as acceptable are accepted by our family. So being relationally dependent, in the name of survival, we do anything we can to disown and deny and suppress those aspects of ourselves that are disapproved of and exaggerate those that are approved of. We dissociate from what we disapprove of. This creates a split within the person that we call the conscious and the subconscious. This self-preservation instinct is in fact our first act of self-rejection. For example, a child is born into a family where anger is not an okay emotion to express. When the child gets angry, they are ashamed for that anger. So the child suppresses and denies their anger for the sake of survival within the household. But the anger does not go away. They just consciously deny it. It becomes subconscious. As an adult, this person will most likely not have any awareness that they have any anger in them at all. They will not and cannot see themselves clearly because they have denied that aspect of themselves. So when people tell them that they are angry, they will not relate to that at all. They may only relate to themselves as easygoing. We deny, suppress, or disown something. It's not like it just disappears. We just lose our conscious awareness of it. We dissociate from the awareness of that thing. Now, in order for us to recognize that thing which we are denying and suppressing, we have to feel the pain of the absence of that particular thing. No wonder self-awareness is so difficult. Every human in existence that was ever socialized, which is everyone, went through this process of splitting themselves into parts, parts that are owned and parts that are disowned. This self-rejection is the birth of self-hate. The emptiness that we feel is the result of those missing, rejected, or disowned parts of ourselves. And the soul is motivated for one thing, that's to make us whole again. We will be provided every single opportunity to become whole again. But in order to become whole again, we need to see and accept the aspects of ourselves that we disowned. This is painful. Self-awareness does not come naturally to people who like to avoid pain. Because in order for us to really get to a space of wholeness, what we have to do is to stop avoiding the pain. We have to stop avoiding that feeling of void that is inherent within us because of the missing aspects of ourselves, and instead, we need to go straight in the direction of it. So where does projection come into all of this? we tend to overcompensate for whatever trait we have suppressed or denied or rejected. For example, somebody who is super apathetic is going to suppress the aspect of themselves that strives, and someone who strives is most likely going to suppress the aspects of themselves that are apathetic. Now, because the soul is motivated in the direction of completion, in the direction of wholeness, it wants to find a partner that makes it feel more whole. So the external world becomes the substitute for what we're missing in our internal world. For this very reason, in our partnerships and friendships, we tend to attract both extremes. We attract people into our lives who mirror both extremities within us so that we can have the opportunity to be aware of our own dichotomy. The law of attraction responds to both extremes, the overcompensation and the aspect of ourselves that we have suppressed the extreme. We are a match to them, even though they seem to be the opposite of us, because that denied self is still a part of us and is still, therefore, subject to the law of attraction. But our partners, romantic partners specifically, or those that are the very closest to us, tend to be our opposing mirror. They reflect the attribute we suppressed, and we reflect the aspect that they suppressed. The person who is apathetic, therefore, will most likely end up in a relationship with a success freak, and both of them will be caused pain by the other because each is a reminder of the rejected aspect of themselves. They reflect to each other the lost self. And guess what? We recognize and see in other people the things that we have rejected and denied within ourselves. This is really the essence of projection. When we notice an attribute in someone else that we have made not okay within ourselves long ago, we have the same reaction to that that we did to that aspect within us the first time. Reject it. Avoid it. Suppress it. Get rid of it. On the flip side, when we see positive aspects in other people that we have suppressed within ourselves, we fall in love. It feels like our opportunity to become more whole. We want more of it. We become addicted to it. We glorify it and put it on a pedestal and even idolize it. This is, in fact, what's happening when you see crowds of screaming girls at Justin Bieber concerts. They are all projecting the positive aspects that they have disowned in themselves onto him, mostly a sense of significance and sexuality, which they, of course, disowned in order to be good, obedient, humble little girls who obeyed their parents. The main characteristic of the suppressed or denied self is its complete invisibility to you and its complete visibility to other people. This is why it must surprise the hell out of you that some people see traits in you that you don't see at all. But guess what? This is how it's supposed to work if you've been suppressing an aspect of yourself. You're not supposed to have any awareness of it. That was the point in the first place. Dissociating from it was your survival technique. So if somebody makes you feel like projection is another personality flaw, you can think again. Because for all of us that have been socialized, this is going to be the outcome. Any extreme aversion to a trait in another person is a reflection of the level of rejection that you develop towards that trait or the potential of that trait within yourself. The more we love something in someone else, the more we disowned it in ourselves long ago. Now, there's a misunderstanding when it comes to projection. There's an idea that when projection is happening, when someone is projecting something onto somebody else, they're projecting a trait that that other person does not have. But projection is always a two-way street. That means one of two things. Either both people have that very same trait, and the one is just recognizing it in the other, or the very act of being a match to being projected upon is indicative of something that is being reflected in the other person. In other words, to have someone project upon us, we have to be a vibrational match to that experience, meaning that the experience of being projected upon is also reflecting something that is denied within ourselves. On that note, it must be said that projection has become like the single biggest cop-out and deflection technique that has ever been invented, especially in the New Age community. it drives me nuts when I hear people saying, you're just projecting. It's a super good way to get out of having to look at yourself clearly or objectively. You're never going to get to a space of self-awareness if that's what you continue to do. You cannot consciously see someone clearly until you are completely conscious of yourself. If you aren't, you will continue to see everyone through the filter of your own subconscious mind. Every time we cop out of looking at ourselves by saying, you're just projecting, we miss the opportunity to see ourselves clearly, and we miss the opportunity to see our world and each other clearly. Every single one of us projects. Every single one of us recognizes what we have denied and suppressed and disowned within ourselves in its external reflection. At this point in our evolutionary history, projection is not going to stop completely, and the goal of your life should not be to stop projecting. It should be to become completely self-aware. And our extreme negative and extreme positive reactions to others are the perfect opportunity to develop self-awareness. Also, the more we reject something in someone else, the more we perpetuate our own wounding. Because in rejecting or disapproving of that thing in them, we are re-rejecting and re-disapproving of it in ourselves. So here we are. How to uncover your self-rejection by using projection to your advantage. Number one, look at the negative traits or aspects about other people that you don't like. Especially look at the traits you don't like about your partner. What bothers you? Step two, discover the positive intention behind the thing that you hate in other people. In other words, what is the real positive intention for the reason that they're doing that super negative thing or possessing that negative trait? The answer is, of course, always going to be in line with trying to keep themselves from getting hurt. Three, why was it dangerous or is it dangerous for those people to be the opposite of those negative traits? For example, if I'm lazy, why was it dangerous or not okay to be driven and motivated? Four, recognize that no matter how much you might want to deny it or not admit to it, these aspects that you despise in other people are always a reflection of yourself. These are attributes that you have suppressed. These traits are a mirror of what you've rejected in yourself. The more you're trying to protect yourself from yourself, the more the aspects you hate in others will look nothing like you. You will tell yourself, I'm not that way at all. Step five. Be willing to be vulnerable enough that you are able to open your mind up to the idea that these traits are yours and recognize how it's true that they are yours. Now, there are two possibilities here. Either you are very much like those things you hate in others, or those things you hate in others are so buried and so rejected in you that you never do that same thing to a degree that's unhealthy. Six, if you're struggling with this process, involve other people in the process. A good way to know if you've been suppressing or denying something or projecting is if you have heard the same negative thing about yourself from more than one person. Another good idea is to have people that know you well write down the things that they don't like about you, those negative aspects that they see. And then take special notice of the things that more than one person says. Just as you did with your partner earlier or with other people earlier, ask yourself, why was it dangerous to be the opposite of these negative traits that I obviously possess? For example, why is it not okay for me to be lazy? Eight, begin to find approval for the things that you dislike in other people and in yourself. Now, this is not the same thing as lying to yourself. You can't say, oh, they're narcissistic, I like that, because it's not true. But there might be some things that come along with being narcissistic that would be really nice, that are actual positives. Those are the kinds of things you want to look at so you can release your resistance, not only to other people, but more especially to the aspect of yourself that you are denying, suppressing, and trying to dissociate from. For example, a person who is cruel may have no problem caring what other people think of them. Don't we all wish we could be that free? 9, adopt the aspects of others that you dislike. In fact, just mirrors of aspects of yourself that you dislike in a way that benefits you. This doesn't mean become lazy or become cruel. What it means is take time off or quit saying yes to everyone. What is the positive aspect of someone who is lazy? They're not afraid to rest. So adopting that disowned aspect of yourself could take the form of you taking a rest. This will bring you closer to the state of wholeness. You can do this entire process that I've just outlined with positives as well. To do that, you simply need to figure out what you admire, envy, or fall in love with in other people, especially your partner, kids, and idols, and discover the positive intention behind suppressing those things inside yourself. Discover why it was dangerous to have those positive traits. For example, if I'm lazy and I envy people who are driven and motivated, why was it dangerous or not okay to be driven and motivated growing up? Find ways to express those particular traits in your life. So if I'm at a Justin Bieber concert and I love the significance that he has, how do I let myself have more significance? Knowing, of course, that the aspect of me that is suppressed is still an aspect of me. There's a portion in there that is highly significant and that wants that significance to be expressed. Judgment doesn't have to be such a bad thing. And you can't stop judging just by deciding to do it. Has that ever worked for any of you? I've never seen it work before. What that means is, instead of worrying ourselves with stopping judging other people, we need to instead develop an open mind that is open enough to take a look at our judgments completely, to use our judgments of other people, both positive and negative, to recognize the aspects that we have rejected within ourselves. This causes our judgments to turn into observations. So, what do you judge? Projection is one of the best tools for self-awareness, also one of the best excuses to avoid self-awareness. We cannot be truly authentic as long as we continue to reject, suppress, deny aspects of ourselves, whether they be positive or negative. So if you are willing to be uncomfortable enough to see yourself clearly, most especially the aspects of yourself that are missing, I can guarantee you that you are well along the way to authenticity and you are well along the way to a state of wholeness. Have a good week.
Nice. Both of those clips were beautiful. The second clip I didn't listen to, but it's about cutting the ties, right? These soul contracts, these agreements that we really didn't agree to, you know what I mean? It's not that we don't love, she used parents as an example, but that's like the parent-child relationship, but that can be anybody, right? That can be our partner, our lover, our teacher, you know, anything, any contract, you know, that we sign. Contracts do not have to be just signed, like, you know, with pen. It can be like a mental agreement, you know what I mean? A soul attachment, a soul agreement that we made. that was made, okay, let me say that. That was made that a lot of times we didn't agree to, but a lot of times we did agree to, you know what I mean? Accountability in that, like, okay, wait, on what level, you know, as Teal Swan says, she's awesome. Go like and subscribe to her channel, guys. Video credits are in the show notes. But she mentioned in looking at the positive, right? People always say look at the positive, but I always say look at the balance, okay? That's how I see it, right? Look at the balance in everything, right? Find the beauty in the chaos. So, you know, even with me, you know, it's kind of like, okay, wait a minute. I didn't agree to that, or I am not going to continue to be spun in this web, you know, of what you expect of me. And that's on every level. And on my lower vibratory level, you know, the web that I spun from my own motherfucking self, you know, it's just one day I was like, oh, nope, you're not going to continue to spin this web, okay? So, you know, it's what that video was about, someone was about breaking the ties, you know, cutting the cord, as I say. A lot of people think cutting cord like a bad thing, and it could be dangerous. We have a lot of fear. But sometimes, you guys, when we cut those cords internally with some of those agreements that no longer work for us, you will see how much you evolve. Telling y'all. So they kept mentioning the subconscious mind. They kept mentioning the subconscious mind. So we're going to go ahead and go out with the subconscious mind, guys. You know I love y'all. I'm definitely going to keep this podcast under 2 hours now. I got a lot going on, but how to reprogram your subconscious mind, eliminate intrusive negative thoughts and limiting beliefs. You know, it's very important to be aware of the subconscious thoughts that we have on autopilot. I cannot express that enough. Because that is the very thing that keeps us in the mental prison. So projection, guys, be aware of what you allow into your spaces. You know what I mean? Be aware on all levels that be aware. Being aware. Okay. There we go. So, yeah, guys, I'm going to end with Ralph Smart. I love you guys, and as you guys know, I'm on every weekend. I do not have a set time. I don't have a set time anymore, although I think this was a very great podcast to be aware of the projections, not only in the external world, but the projections that we project upon ourselves, you know, in our own internal spaces. Okay, so what I gave you today was an outline of many different perspectives. I love the parent and child perspective, guys, because at the end of the day, what is it that you like? What is it that you love? Who did you come into this world to be? You know, and a lot of times it's not to be what our superiors wanted for us, you know, or whatever they had to gain out of us being here, or whatever they have to gain, whether they want to admit it or not. If you are not authentically comfortable with you in your own full expression, it may not be for you. Love you guys. Till next time. Peace.
One love to you beautiful deep divers, another beautiful day. Look, I got leaves kissing me. There's no place I'd rather be than with the birds, bees, leaves, and trees. Listen, you can hear my friends, you can hear the beautiful birds singing. I woke up like this deep divers, all magical and fly with the beautiful turquoise on. And I hope you're taking care of yourself. See, I come here to remove limiting beliefs. And the cat down the road told me you have a lot of limiting beliefs that are holding you back from where you need to be. Deep divers, you've come to the right place. So, how to stop limiting beliefs? Reprogram your subconscious mind. The information I'm about to share with you is going to blow your mind away. You're going to raise your eyebrows like the Rock. It's going to rock you out of your chair. Even the cat down the road is pulling up. We got a whole lot to talk about, but first, let's breathe. That was healthy. Let's go, deep divers. Woo! Breathing in that good ass prana, baby. Raising the frequency. Raising the vibration. Take that, take that, take that. Good ass energy I'm sending you. key. Infinite Waters, diving deep once again. Beautiful deep divers, we are out here in the heart of nature, and I'm FaceTiming you right now. If you are watching this video, the universe is making a way for you. The universe is making a path for you. The universe wants you to know this today. A way will be made for you. If you're ready, smash that like button right now and share this video. Hit that like button right now and share this video, because somebody out there needs to see this. Somebody, that could be you, has limiting beliefs that are holding you back from where you need to be. Look, I've been there, done that, even got the turquoise to prove it. Got the t-shirt, deep divers. And my whole journey has been all about overcoming one limiting belief, and then another one, and then another one. And that's what helps me become my greatest version. I want to talk to you today, deep divers. I want to talk to you today about how to stop limiting beliefs. Are you ready? Apparently so. And we ain't even had breakfast yet. Can I get a hello? So let me share with you what's helped me along my journey, deep divers. How to stop limiting beliefs. Reprogram your subconscious mind. So you already know, I studied psychology, and I love talking about removing limiting beliefs and reprogramming your subconscious mind, because it affects every single human being on this planet. What if I told you everything is BS? Would you believe me? It's all BS. Belief systems. Slow motion this side. And once you can free your mind from limiting beliefs, game over. Oh my gosh. Once upon a time, I had a limiting belief saying I could never live a life of abundance, wealth, prosperity, and love. And guess what? The universe said, your wish is my command. So I had to reprogram my subconscious mind. And then I started to crack the Da Vinci Code. I started to realize, yes, I can. And yes, I am. I'm right here, deep divers. So I meet so many people who first and foremost say this, I can't. And that is a limiting belief you have to get rid of right now. Instead of I can't, at least try. Or like Yoda said, don't try, do. I always say, I'm going to give it a go. I'm here, deep divers, after all these years. And the reason why is because I said, it's possible. I can inspire millions of people every single day. 2013, I said, okay, is it possible for me to make a video every single day? You must be out of your mind. Then I had a voice inside of me saying, Ralph, give it a go. Remove that limiting belief. You have energy? Yes, I have energy. So let's see. Let's find out. And people say, gosh, Ralph, you're so consistent. The MJ of YouTube. Oh my gosh. So fresh and so clean. It's because I removed that limiting belief of I can't produce every single day. Say, actually, of course I can. I woke up with energy, raising the frequency, and I've got so much good energy to share with you. I'm here to serve humanity. I'm here to help all of you become your greatest versions. Now, a lot of people say this, only after I get this or I get that, then I will be happy. Or if only I had that, then I would be happy. That's a limiting belief that's holding you back. Your ego tells you, once you have everything that you desire, then you will be happy. Your spirit tells you, find peace now and everything will fall into place. What? Slow motion this side. How to stop limiting beliefs. Deep divers. Reprogram your subconscious mind. Let me tell you this. A lot of people say this. My health will never improve. I'm always going to feel like this. You feel like crap right now. And in your mind, you tell yourself, I'm never ever going to get better. That's a limiting belief you have to get rid of. You see, deep divers, instead of saying that, say, I'm going to make it right. I'm going to come outside to meet Ralph Smart, get that vitamin D, feel better, release these endorphins, do some exercise, do a little samba, baby. I refuse to feel this way every single day. I choose right now to feel better. This is a more empowering belief system that can help you out. Deep divers, do you have a limiting belief that's holding you back right now? A lot of people say this, I have little or no control over my future or destiny. I'm going to be doing the same thing every single day, getting the same crappy experiences and feeling terrible. That's a limiting belief that you have. You want to say, my destiny, my future is in my hands. What is the future? The future is nothing more than a continuation of present moments. Slow motion this side. You want to stop limiting beliefs, deep divers. Move out of your own way. Reprogram your subconscious mind. A lot of people say this, making money is hard. Making money is hard. Making money is hard. If you keep telling yourself that, you're going to be broke for the rest of your life. When I cracked the Da Vinci Code and realized I am abundance. Abundance is the natural state. Lack is the only illusion. What? Slow motion this side. There is more than enough to go around. This entire planet is full of abundance. When you see an orange tree, you don't just see one. You see hundreds. I was in Greece. There were so many orange trees. I ate all of them. 7-day vegan challenge and felt fantastic. Deep divers. So, we just said, remove that limiting belief. I have little or no control over my health. And also, I have little or no control over my future or destiny. That has got to go. You really want to stop limiting beliefs and reprogram your subconscious mind? You want to start saying that my subconscious mind is so intelligent because your subconscious mind can perform a trillion tasks at once. Your subconscious mind works through imagery. It doesn't understand the words that are coming out of your mouth. It doesn't understand the words that are coming out of your mouth. To reprogram your subconscious mind, start seeing what inspires you as opposed to what makes you miserable. A lot of people's limiting beliefs are tied into what they're seeing. Their environment is not inspiring. You've been in that city your entire life. It's time to get out, come into nature. Oh, I see a beautiful tree. This is now reprogramming your subconscious mind so you can now believe you can live the life you've always wanted to live. Deep divers, do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? Let's talk about stopping limiting beliefs. You really want to reprogram your subconscious mind? Don't just say it only happens to those people. A lot of people might see wealthy people. Oh my gosh, I could never live a life like that. They're in the Malibu Hills. True story. 2015, I made a dream into a reality. I was living a $1 million lifestyle in the Malibu Hills in Topanga. I was living the life and I still am. How did I do that? I said, oh, if it can happen for those people, it can happen for me. Rewind. I was on YouTube years back thinking, gosh, I should just quit because I had no improvement. No one was, had only like the cat down the road as my subscriber. Deep divers. But then I got rid of a limiting belief. I reprogrammed my subconscious mind. I said, you know what? If they can get a YouTube Gold Award, so can I. Because you see, word is bond. You can learn to remove limiting beliefs by speaking what you want into existence. That's one of the four agreements. Be impeccable with your word. Be impeccable with your word. Start saying, I can and it will happen for me. Hit that like button right now, deep diver. Share the video. Hit that like button right now, deep diver. Share the video. You want to stop limiting beliefs and reprogram your subconscious mind? Your subconscious mind is always alert and aware. Even when you go to bed, your subconscious mind is still active. What sounds have you got on in the background? A lot of people are watching Netflix. They might have some TV on in the background, and the information coming from that TV is not positive. Don't you realize you're absorbing all of that information? That's why you wake up feeling tired and no good. Why not have a bit of Bob Marley on in the background? Why not listen to some binaural beats? What about the 432 hertz, deep divers? What about the 528 hertz, deep divers? This is now reprogramming your subconscious mind. So when you wake up, you feel fantastic. How to stop limiting beliefs? Reprogram your subconscious mind. A lot of people say this, I could never get with him or her. They're way out of my league. Why do people say this? This is a limiting belief. Well, guess what? It actually now becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy because word is bond. So instead of saying I could never get with her or him, why not start working on yourself so you can be a vibrational match? So you can be a vibrational match to that which you desire. Because like I say, law of attraction states we never attract what we want. We always attract who we are. This is how to remove that limiting belief. Right? So you have to start saying, hey, you know what? I can be with that kind of person. Because I am good enough. I am worthy. And I'm going to work on myself. I'm going to be someone else's upgrade. Deep divers, how to stop limiting beliefs. Reprogram your subconscious mind. Look, habits are very important. Your daily habits build up your life. If you have habits which are holding you back from becoming your greatest version, they have got to go. I'm not just talking about picking your nose, deep divers. I'm talking about a habit of being somewhere that's making you miserable and thinking that you can't change it. That's a habit. So you have to get into the habit, which is a place where you live, of realizing the universe gave you free will and a choice. You can choose. You can choose. You can choose to be where you want to be. You can choose to say, you know what, I don't want to do this. I want to start a business. I want to put in the groundwork, lay the foundation. I want to write a book. I want to get off my ass and do something about it. Deep divers, getting passionate out here. How to stop limiting beliefs, remove those limiting beliefs, reprogram your subconscious mind. You keep telling yourself that stuff, deep divers. But it's no good. Don't you know repetition reprograms your subconscious mind? So people go to bed a lot of the time saying, I'm no good, I'm no good, I'm no good. Like Bart Simpson writing on the wall, right? I'm no good, I'm no good. I can't, I can't, I can't. That now becomes you. So repetition reprograms your subconscious mind. You have to start repeating to yourself, saying these affirmations, it can and it will happen for me. Act as if it's already here. This is how to remove limiting beliefs and reprogram your subconscious mind. Deep divers. I'm not finished. Love. A lot of people say, I am not worthy of love. I will never find love. Is that you? I've missed the boat. To reprogram your subconscious mind, to remove that limiting belief, you must remind yourself that you don't have to worry about missing the boat when you realize you are the boat. Slow motion this side. And love will find you once you find the love within yourself. Once you love yourself a little bit more today, accept yourself, love will come into your life. Are you ready for that, deep divers? Let's talk about removing limiting beliefs. Let's talk about reprogramming your subconscious mind. I am not good enough. That's a common one. I am not good enough. I am not good enough. Okay. Now what? I am not good enough. You see, a lot of people who say that give themselves an excuse to not do anything about the situation they're in, about who they're becoming. You have to stop saying that and start saying, I was born with a gift. I, just by being alive, have a gift of life. I am good enough. That's the reason why I'm on the planet. God loves me. The universe loves me. Even the cat down the road loves me. Deep divers, don't you feel better right now? A lot of people say, another limiting belief, I don't have enough. I don't have enough money. I don't have enough time. But wait a minute. We all have 24 hours in the day. What we do during that time is a choice, once again, choice, that we all have. So don't make excuses, you don't have enough time. I got the same amount of time as you, deep divers, but I'm choosing to do something with it. Oh my gosh. A lot of people also say, I don't do enough. When actually you've been busting your ass every single day. Give yourself more credit. Be proud of yourself. You're doing better than you think. A common limiting belief, deep divers. My situation will never change. And some people say this as well. I can't change. I was born like this. No accountability, no responsibility. That's a limiting belief. You gotta let it go. The only constant in the universe is change, period. So stop saying, I'm like this. I can't change. This is the way I was born. No, you can change. Always say, universe, continue to mold me into this being who is on this journey to become their greatest version, because I am the work in progress and the masterpiece at the same time. Deep divers. I want everybody to smash that like button right now and share this video. I just went in. Smash that like button right now and share this video. Woo! We have just removed limiting beliefs, reprogrammed our subconscious mind, and that's why I'm just saying. Feels so good to be alive, baby. Can I get a hello?
Collective security for sure.